let's welcome our guests. Kia ora and welcome Patrick Smalley.
Order.
Business commentator Neil Jones and Bridget Morton, our political commentators with us. Welcome you two.
Morena.
Susie Wiles, science commentator extraordinaire. Morena and welcome. And tēnā koe to Andrew Holden, media commentator. It's a bit different. We're not all in the studio, isn't it? It's a bit, you know, it's a bit sort of zoomy. But that's all good. Let's crack off and find out, crack in and find out what you've made of 2021. It had a hard year to follow, Susie. It's been a heck of a year on the science front, right? What have been some highlights for you?
Oh, I mean, this has just been a COVID-dominated year, right? And I guess for me, when I reflect back on the very first session I did with you at the beginning of this year, what I talked about was whole genome sequencing and how important that was to our response, but also talked about vaccine inequity globally. And at that time, there'd been something like 39 million doses given to high-income countries and just 25 doses to low-income countries. And then, of course, this year we've had Delta and now Omicron. And, you know, I guess we end the year knowing, yes, whole genome sequencing is really important for identifying these new variants, but these new variants are arising because of, you know, a lack of stopping transmission. And part of that is not getting vaccines to people all around the world. So, yeah, that's just COVID, and it feels like it's sort of, you know, what's next year going to be like?
Yeah, but it's happening at an incredible pace, but incredible things are happening. We've had these vaccines invented. We've had these vaccines rolled out. We're getting some treatments coming as well. It's really on the social sciences front. It was really interesting talking to our UK correspondent saying, this Christmas, many people are just doing voluntarily, without being told by the government, the sort of sensible thing to do in order to make sure they can, you know, go and get their Christmas and their holidays underway.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's something that, you know, as in New Zealand sort of really understand is that when we act collectively in our best interest, you know, stopping transmission is the way that we get through this. But I guess it just highlights, you know, the importance of a kind of global response. You know, and you're absolutely right. It has been astonishing. You know, who would have thought at the beginning of the year that we would have ended this year with, you know, more than 90% of eligible people vaccinated, or at least over 12s vaccinated, right? You know, at the beginning of the year there was quite a lot more hesitation. We didn't even know, I think, which vaccines we were actually going to be starting to roll out properly. So it has been an astonishing thing. And as you say, we've got now a couple of new medicines that have been approved, one of which doesn't look as great as the initial trials were suggesting, but the other one of which looks really good. And what's really important about those medicines is that until they were developed, the only medicines we had for COVID were ones that you had to take in hospital. So there was an antiviral pill, but you had to have it intravenously, which means being, you know, through a drip, being in hospital. But these ones are now ones that you can take orally. So actually my mum's in the UK and she just got she's in the kind of vulnerable classification. So somebody who was on what they call their shielding list last year. And she just got a little thing saying, we're going to give you some swabs so that you can test yourself at home, because if you're exposed, we want you to be able to get these medicines, you know, because if you need to take them within some like 3 days of developing symptoms.
Sure.
So it's kind of amazing, really, that we do have these things now. But and again, they're going to need to be available for everyone.
That amazing Oxford team that we interviewed earlier in the year, they're on now to tackling specifically the Omicron variant. And of course, they've got this platform where they just tweak a particular piece of genetic information and they're off to making the next one. It has been, and what we look back on, as an extraordinary time for science, of medical science in particular. Neil Jones and Bridget Morton, each of you, please, with some of your highs, lows. I mean, we don't have 4 hours, guys, so you're going to have to run through them. Every year in politics we say is crazy, but honestly, this one, Bridget...
Yeah, no, definitely. I think this one is a bit crazy. And I think, you know, I want to sort of avoid that COVID space. I don't think we've had a single show, you know, a single panel this year where we haven't spoken about COVID. But I think a lot of other things have happened, you know, sort of a bit in the background as well. For me, the high has to be the housing supply bill. bipartisan effort. They knew that, you know, both National and Labor knew they were taking a risk, that there was going to be, you know, the NIMBYs out there that were going to have a big, you know, big opposition to having more density of houses. But they both worked together and pushed through. And I'm really hoping to see, you know, we'll start to see the effects of that in the coming years. In terms of lowlights, though, for me, it's immigration. I think, you know, Chris Farfoy came in with a lot of, you know, fanfare that he was one of the sort of up-and-coming ministers, but he's pushed back every decision. We've got this hodgepodge of, you know, some places for this type of worker and this place of worker. Immigration is never easy. But in a time like this, when we've got labour shortages, when we've got skills shortages, when we've got a whole lot of people that worked really hard for us as a country during the lockdown periods, and now we're sort of sending them offshore or not giving them certainties that they can stay here. And in the last 24 hours, I think the deportation story of the Filipino family getting deported, I think tomorrow, I think as they're scheduled, over the fact that they claimed food vouchers during the first lockdown, I think is just appalling and exactly where a minister should be stepping in.
All righty. And we don't want to sort of bring in the polls. If we bring in the polls just as an indicator of public mood with performance, we started to see some shifts later in the year. But interestingly, it was Labor coming down but not going to National. It was going to ACT. And then we had that little event at the end of the year, Bridget, that seems to have gained back some ground for National.
Yeah, it's definitely looking like it was the positive move to do, moving to Luxon, but we'll have to see what the polls do in the new year. There's no doubt that the country was screaming out for an opposition that could be effective. There was a lot of disgruntled people that wanted to, you know, have their voices heard. So you saw that sort of movement towards ACT. But you still got to remember that Labor is still doing pretty well in the polls. They've come from really high places, they're still polling highly. So National has still got a lot of ground to make up.
Your take, Neil.
I actually think, and I know we're not supposed to focus on COVID too much, but I actually think, you know, New Zealand achieving that 90% double dose vaccination rate, despite all the bumps on the way, and we know the problems, the slow start, the issues with the Māori vaccination rollout, but getting that 90% has been, I think, a really great national achievement for us. And, you know, I think also when you look at it, the other big thing, lowest death rate in the developed world and one of the better economies. So for all of the sort of hard grind and difficult politics and pretty, you know, relentless lockdown for Auckland this year, well, I think we've actually ended up in a pretty good place for COVID, notwithstanding the spectre of Omicron on the horizon. I also think, just in terms of the politics, two policy areas that I think were really good highlights. I thought the benefit boost in the budget was a really good thing. It's a historically very toxic issue that politicians have thought is too hot to handle, and it seems to have been relatively uncontroversial, and National seems to have sort of agreed they'll live with it. So that's really positive. I agree with Bridget that bipartisan accord on housing, a rare moment of agreement across the aisle that actually provides benefit for New Zealand. It's been one of the main contributors to the housing crisis has been, you know, local neighbourhood NIMBYs stopping people from being able to intensify their land and create more housing. And I think this is really positive. And if I could just, in the spirit of Christmas, say nice something nice about the National Party, I think it's really good to see the end of Judith Collins and hopefully the re-emergence of a more normal National Party. New Zealand needs a good opposition, and we need them to be competent and capable, and I think not focused on things like racist conspiracy theories, but, you know, focusing on sort of economic issues, sort of bread and butter. And I think we're much better as a country if we're arguing about tax cuts and public services than about whether there's a secret Māori plot to overthrow the country.
Thank you, Patrick Smalley. Goodness, what a year, both in sort of the macroeconomic sense and also with what businesses are dealing with. It's been a huge one on your patch.
It sure has. I think the thing that I keep coming back to, though, is that I know that this state of the economy, which has grown, you know, amazingly resiliently, despite the one quarter of very low growth caused by the August lockdown, I know that this has been basically propped up to a very large extent by very low interest rates from the Reserve Bank and a lot of spending by the government, you know, creating money basically and racking up debt. But you can't really fault where the economy is at the end of 2 years of enormous turmoil. From a very basic point of view, and the things that seems to me that matter most in the economy are people working or not, and unemployment is extraordinarily low. It's almost unsustainably low, if you can put it that way, at getting close to 3%. Skill shortages in all directions. We're finding out all kinds of interesting things about the New Zealand economy that we didn't know, and also having some things which we already knew thrown in our faces. And so I basically endorse Bridget and Neil on the housing accord, but also on the immigration front, in the sense that we clearly have major skills shortages emerging, and some of those skills shortages are not going to be filled by people being trained in New Zealand to do that work in a hurry. We've got to start letting people, or finding a way to have people come here, Omicron notwithstanding. I'm not a sort of an open up the gates kind of guy. I think the government's been right, and it's interesting to see the opposition pulling right back in this latest couple of weeks on wanting to open up, because in the end, caution is proving to be our friend. So in that sense, the unemployment situation, or the job situation, is incredible, particularly given the stress that so many small businesses are under. Clearly, there is work for people to do. I think that's an amazing outcome.
Thank you. Go ahead. Don't finish off. Finish
I was just going to say, I didn't put it on my list, but the low light to me this year has been the number of times daily that my inbox fills with, I would say, well-heeled, middle-class Pākehā, older in age, who can't bear the idea of this country also having a Māori name. Why are they so threatened? And I worry that there is a nasty undercurrent building up, which is around the frustrations of COVID and parts of this government's agenda, which has yet to play out and will play out over the next year, and could become quite unpleasantly and unnecessarily racist. The idea that New Zealand could be called Aotearoa as well as New Zealand seems to be the least threatening possible thing to a person who's basically at the top of the heap on any measure, and yet it seems to be so triggering for so many.
Patrick, thank you. On that note, let's come to Andrew Holden, a media commentator. It's the comeback kid, actually, isn't it? The New Zealand commercial media sector. Goodness.
It is. It's been quite remarkable. Before I do that, can I just throw in, because I was enjoying perhaps the wrong word, the Christmas carols at the start. But for anybody who's looking for a different kind of Christmas spirit tomorrow, I highly recommend Bob Dylan's version of Christmas carols. It's, let's just say, it's unusual, and you'll certainly have a good laugh at some of the interpretations. But
it's the second strength to Andrew's bow is that he's a major muso, so take the advice.
I don't know about that, but you'll certainly get a good chuckle out of it. Look, the media this year has been quite remarkable. When we look at the first year of the pandemic last year, that was very much the brutal musical chairs, the collapse of the Bauer magazine, stuff being bought for a dollar, Discovery coming in and buying TV. There was a lot of ructions going through the industry. This year, we're seeing some rays of light, which is really pleasant. NZME, owner of the New Zealand Herald, is looking financially much stronger, and the market's starting to like it. Stuff in its first year of private ownership has made a profit, and owner Sinead Boucher has said that she'll allocate 10% of the company to the staff. We've seen Discovery start to get back into the game in terms of what it will plan to launch next year. MediaWorks with radio are threatening to launch a new talk radio next year, with Tover O'Brien fronting it. So there's been some really positive elements to it. But I think we shouldn't forget that there's still a substantial amount of government support for the media in this country. And in their second round of funding this year for public interest journalism, they're providing $18 million for 110 journalists' roles, mostly for 2 years. So it shows that whilst the industry is looking far healthier, it still needs some substantial government support to keep it in a really positive space.
All right, very good. Hold your thoughts. We'll be back to you a little bit later in the hour. Thank you very, very much to our panellists, Patrick Smalley, Neil Jones, Bridget Morton, Susie Wiles and Andrew Holden.